Welcome to Paradise in the Pines, a podcast about the people, places, and stories that make this the home of American golf. Brought to you by the Pinehurst Southern Pines Aberdeen Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Paradise in the Pines. I'm Phil Wurz, President and CEO of the Pinehurst Southern Pines Aberdeen Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. And this episode, we're joined by Warren Lewis, more affectionately known around these parts as Chef Lewis, or Chef Warren.
Chef Warren, yeah.
And for true transparency, Chef, a member of the Convention Visitors Bureau board.
Yep.
So we appreciate your service to that. So how's it going? Welcome to Paradise in the Pines.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been great. 24 is amazing already. And I'm actually feeling optimistic and proud and pleased and all that kind of stuff. 23 was a great year, and we'll just keep on chugging along.
We're chugging very quickly to the U.S. Open. Are you feeling, because I get the question, you know, are you feeling the excitement? Are you feeling the buzz? I know we are. We get a lot of questions on a daily basis. Are you starting to kind of get the sense that something big's about to come?
Not yet. There's probably another month or so. Till we'll start feeling it. And obviously, you can tell from all the roads are getting prettied up, you know, the Pinehurst traffic circle is going to be amazing looking, and because this is our third or fourth open.
Fourth, yeah, 99, 05, 14,
and then it is number four. Wow, so it's been a while.
It's talking about 14. You were here, right?
We opened in 98.
One thing that we've been trying to do as an organization is to push people, hey, you're going to go to Pinehurst, you're going to enjoy the village, but be sure to go to Southern Pines, go to Aberdeen, go to the Potters and Seagrove, go explore.
Go everywhere.
Right. So, you know, experience. So are you getting the sense that, you know, there will be, with 250,000 people going to be here for the U.S. Open, that there's going to be enough for everybody?
Yes, there will be enough for everybody. And, you know, if I recall correctly from the last couple of Opens, a lot of it is corporate. So the corporations have their deals already set up, and then you'll have a lot of solo people, and they'll go do their thing, and it all sort of works out. There's tons of restaurants now in the area.
Yeah.
Whatever kind of cuisine you're looking for, except for Korean. We're missing Korean food here.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Dan behind the camera there is a huge Indian.
Yeah.
He loves Jaya's. Yeah. He loves Jaya's. And we drove by the one on heading down to Aberdeen on Highway 1.
Right, where Squire's Pub used to be.
Yeah. Have you ever been there? Hadn't been there yet. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
They do, but Korean, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, because we've got to drive up to Raleigh now for Korean.
So your restaurant, you said had been there since the late...
We opened in June of 98.
98. Mm-hmm. So, you know... And you're originally from Long Island, from New York.
Yeah, from New Yorker, and we've been down here now since July of 95.
Now, we'll get into your travels and how much you love travel and traveling the world and your photography, things like that. But what made you, of all the travels and everywhere you've been in your life, made you choose Pinehurst, Southern Pines specifically?
I want to stay married to my wife. So we were living in South Florida, and it was tough. It wasn't a whole lot of fun. We're working a lot. We're driving, an hour away from everything. And I think the turning point for her was she was on 95 and somebody crashed a boat. It came down the intercoastal and the boat jumped and ended up on I-95. And she's like, that's it. It's enough.
Wow.
So that's enough. And there's a buddy of mine, Larry Bird, chef, great chef, super talented. Unfortunately, he's passed now. And he was the executive chef at CCNC. Hmm. He was a bit of a mentor of mine, and actually I'd worked for him in New York, and we always stayed in touch, and even before I went to culinary school, I worked under him, and he really made sure I was set up to go to culinary school. And he and I were talking, we talked all the time, and he said, hey, I need an executive sous chef, are you interested? I said, yeah, let's go up and take a look around. So we came up actually for my birthday in 95, and took a look around, and Marianne loved it, and 3 weeks later we lived here. So there you go. We never planned on staying, but
it kind of grows on you after.
Yeah, it does. It's there's something magical about living here. And I've always kind of called it unicorn breeding ground, but there's something special about the people that live here more than anywhere else we've ever lived. And we've lived in kind of a few places, up and down the East Coast. We lived in Australia for a while. It's the most caring, nurturing group of people you'll ever meet in your whole life. it's a true community. A couple examples, when Ben was younger, our son was younger, he had a little race car that we'd push him around on. It was really a stroller. Mm-hmm. And he was with my mom one day, and somebody stopped and said, "Hey, Ben, you know, do you know who this woman is?" He's like, "Yeah, it's my grandmother." Well, and that's cool. You know, and anywhere else, nobody's going to check to make sure things are. But this is somebody, and we knew who it was, who's just checking to make sure, you know, kid was okay.
Yeah.
You know, we've put up a sign in the restaurant that, you know, this every now and then we're closed for whatever. And when Marianne was pregnant, we had to close. My dad was in a car accident. And it worked out okay. So we put up a sign saying, you know, we're closed for medical emergency. And the number of people who called us who were concerned that, you know, it was something to do with Marianne's pregnancy, it was huge. Mm. You know, it's just that kind of thing. You know, people stop by and just to stop in and say hi.
Yeah.
You know, during the course of the day, and it's just a great place to be.
Is that something that you enjoy as a restaurateur? That you know, you're busy cooking, you're in the midst of all the culinary, all the creativity. But then, is it something that buoys you, that you know your clientele, the people, that kind of caring,
cool.
The people that you see on a daily basis, weekly basis?
So how neat is that? You know, I've worked in a lot of restaurants. I started doing my first restaurant job out in a hotel. I was 12, so I've been around hospitality industry for a very long time, and it's really kind of nice that people care about you, your staff, your business, not out of looking to get anything out of it, but just because we care.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And what's kind of funny now is there's a number of people who come in now that, you know, are parents, and they used to come in with their parents. So it's kind of neat. To see that was kind of a jump in thought, but well, but it's kind of neat to see the progression and patterns of all these families that we're a part of, and they're a part of our family. So it's kind of neat. Yeah.
We talked about travel a little bit. You love to travel. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. We tried to get you on the podcast. It's like, no, I'm going to Iceland. I'm flying here.
Jenna,
what is the passion? I mean, you hear people talk about, and I've heard like, her last name's Stephanie Brown, Suzanne Brown, but she used to work for Travel Channel.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And we saw her at the tourism conference last year in Asheville. And she talked about the power of travel and how you need to get out and experience other cultures, see other people. You know, Dan, or behind the camera there, he's lived in a bunch of other places. You've been around the world. What is the allure for you of travel? What provides that love and buzz that you get from going somewhere you haven't been, or going back to a place that you love and seeing something different?
That's it's almost hard to explain. So let's take Iceland, because as you know, my family goes to Iceland a lot. We should probably become honorary citizens.
It's probably why they have the direct flight now from Raleigh to Iceland.
It's super convenient. And so the first time Ben and I went, so let's step back a little bit. My wife's mom's retirement plan was to travel with our child. So she started traveling with our child when he was about 10. Mm. And really, that's the best way to explore the world, to grow, to learn, to develop, all those kind of parts of the equation. Because, like you just said, that's where you learn about other cultures, and you learn empathy and sympathy and how people are different, but they're the same. And you get to see things and put the world into perspective and put yourself into perspective where you fit in the world.
Mm, yeah.
So it's kind of neat. So the first time I went to Iceland, Ben and my mother-in-law had went, and they stopped and switched planes in Iceland to go to France. So Ben and I would go away every year, and this was his 16th birthday, and I said, so where do you want to go for your 16th birthday? Because we would go away, you know, someplace locally. We go to Williamsburg, or we go to Disney, whatever. And he said, let's go to Iceland. I said, okay. And then, like everything else, I kind of looked into it. And off we went to Iceland. We were there for about 5 days. I think it was a short trip. And one of the guys getting off the plane, I'll never forget what he said. He said, oh, I come here once a year. And me thinking, why? What is it about this? And as soon as we walked out the plane, and there's this Habit Trail that they send you out on when you're on a plane. You go to the Habit Trail and you go through immigration and custom, and you get outside. And Ben and I just looked at each other, and we belonged there.
Hmm.
It's the only way I can explain it. You ever get someplace and you just feel like you're grounded. You belong there. You want to be there. And that's how we feel about Iceland. And
like you had been there before?
Not that we've been there before, but we just felt grounded.
Hmm.
And you know, my wife's an Iceland junkie as well, the three of us. He met us last year in November. We go every November at the very least for Airwaves, which is a music festival that we can't miss.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And Ben came over, and he's in school in Europe, so he came over and met us. And we just have a great time, and he's brought his girlfriend there, and it's just what we do. We go to Iceland. After my dad passed, I went to Iceland for about a week, every month for about 8 or 9 months, to just kind of, that was my healing thing. And I can't explain.
I was going to say, it's just unexplainable how that, the connection.
Which I think is very honest. You know, if I can say, oh, I like it because of this.
Right.
It's you like this, if that makes sense.
And maybe you don't want to find out. Maybe,
yeah, I'm good
with
what it is.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm good with it. So right now we're only going once a year. Well, things play out and other trips, and we're still paying for college. So there's that. And so it's one of our family's favorite places. And almost every place becomes a favorite place when you start to understand it.
You know, in your travels and in your life, you developed a love for photography. And I think for those of you who are familiar with Pine Straw Magazine, Chef Warren was featured, not so much for your food, but because of your skills as a photographer. I mean, when I see some of the pictures that you've taken, we're going to see some of them here. I think National Geographic. I mean, how did you develop the skill and the patience to sit there probably for hours or days to capture some of the images you're going to see here?
So that's really funny because I have trouble sitting still. You notice how much I'm talking with my hands.
Right.
Sitting still isn't one of my strong points. I think that's probably part of why I do what I do, is that there's always kind of motion and movement in it. But something about going out to photograph a polar bear or an Arctic fox or an elephant, or it just makes you stop and, pun intended, focus on what you're doing. I got my first camera when I was 14. Like most 14-year-old boys, I was kind of socially inept, awkward, whatever the phrase is. My dad got me a Pentax Spotmatic and a 28-millimeter lens and a 135-millimeter lens, and probably a 50 as well, because everybody owns a 50. And I used that all through junior high and high school to photograph football teams and cheerleaders and clubs and any events that were going on. So it gave me a way to be involved, but to have something in between me and the person that I'm involved with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it started. And obviously there's lots of toys and gadgets you can get with it as well. And I mean, I don't have as cool a setup as this. I told you I just had tripod envy.
Sure.
And, but it's just what I do, you know? So this little Arctic fox was taken up by the Arctic. So
I mean, how long did you have to wait to just get that? He's it's almost like he's posing for the camera.
So I believe, and I think she's a she, but I think she was posing and probably sitting there for an hour and a half or so, which wasn't too long. There are other trips.
How far away were you? I know you have
so this is Zodiac. This is Zodiac, and this was relatively close. This is probably 10 meters away. You know, Arctic fox isn't going to eat you, and they're the size of a house cat. I mean, not one of our cats, because our cats are pretty hefty.
Like a bobcat.
Yeah. So it's the size of a house cat, and they're super cool. They're really kind of nice. They're pretty friendly. And she actually had a couple kits with her, some little babies that were hanging out. But, she's definitely posing. No question about it. And then there's other times. So we're up in northwest Iceland. Actually, this is one of these photos. So
this is in Iceland?
This is in northwest Iceland in Hornsvatr. It's a private reserve that you need to get permits to go into and whatever else. And I've got a buddy who's a Nat Geo photographer that I've traveled with a few times. So we had a permit to go there. And what you do is you kind of bury yourself in the snow so that should an Arctic fox walk by, you can take its photo. Which to me seems like a great way to spend 10 or 12 days.
Right.
You know, and
freezing
to
death.
You know, there are clothes now that will keep you warm. Actually, for this trip, it wasn't too bad.
I'm not snow
pants and a turtleneck, merino turtleneck. And I was wearing a sweater that Marianne had made. Marianne's a knitter. And honestly, I was fine. Obviously, I need to wear a hat because, but it was okay. And, but it's worth it.
That's a spectacular picture.
So it's super intimate. You know, it really is. And
it's I think in the Pine Star article I read, you talked about the eyes, making sure, you know, the eyes are, I mean, the eyes say so much. Yeah, it's just amazing.
Was it like the eyes of the picture of the soul is in a book or something? Oh, so this is kind of cool. So this was in, so there's a DMZ, there's this no man's land between Finland and Russia. And this is where this was. There was a pack of wolves out there. And also I was with a buddy of mine who's a Nat Geo. And so this kind of wolves came up and they're kind of neat. Like, look how smart he looks.
Yeah.
You know, and you know,
he looks kind of hungry too.
Fair. Yeah. Well, we were actually in a hide for this one, so they couldn't see us. So you had these.
And how far away were you for you?
So this was probably like 30 meters away. So like 90, 100 feet away. So this was relatively close because they're really skittish. So the wolves will take off in a heartbeat. So we also saw bears up there, and we're looking for wolverines, but we didn't see any of them because that would have been kind of cool.
Yeah.
But northern Finland's beautiful. So this one was probably the alpha of the pack. We're not really sure. Showed up for a moment and disappeared. It's the only time we saw him in about a week or so. And but look at his eyes. Aren't they beautiful?
Yeah.
And also super alert, knows what's going on, you know, is on point, paying attention to what's going on. There's that. Oh, this was a little dangerous. So brown bear.
And where was this?
This was in the forest up in Finland. And the correct answer is too close. So this bear got about 2 or 3 meters away from me. And I was in a small little hide.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was kind of – so it was a hide like the size of this table, maybe even shorter than the table. And – I was so focused on getting the image, you know, checking exposure and checking focus and checking your aperture and all the things, that it really didn't click in my brain where this was. And the other three that I was with
he could eat you.
Well, yeah, but it happens. You know, people get eaten. It happens. And
but how exciting to be that close.
And I didn't realize it, or it didn't like click in my brain until the other three that I was with were in another hide, a little bit larger hide. And they came over when the bear went away and they're like, whoa. I was like, yeah. And then I turn pale, and then your fight or flight kind of takes over. But at the interim, I'm thinking, well, I've got a camera and a lens. I guess I can kind of whack them with it if I need to.
Right.
But that's neat. Oh, so this is in the Belavieja forest. And these guys are really cool. So these are European bison. And this is a true success story. Now you know why I have trouble sitting still. So these are a true success story. So in 1910, 1912, the last European bison was shot. In the wild. And there were 12 or 18 of them in human captivity, private zoos, private collections, because people used to collect animals. And they started a breeding program. So now there are 5,000 of these beautiful animals back out in the forest with plans by 2030 to have another 5,000.
Wow, that's amazing.
So these animals used to be all across Europe, and now they're kind of on the way back.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
And they're narrower and taller than the domestic, than what we think of for bison or buffalo in the United States.
The ones in the United States are much broader, stockier.
Right, but because they're out on the plains, so these guys have to rummage through trees to get someplace. So I'm thinking that's why they're a little more narrow. This is a redhead woodpecker.
Red-cockaded woodpecker?
Yeah, redhead woodpecker. And I'd never seen woodpeckers up close other than the ones on the course at CCNC until we're up in the forest, and then there are all these woodpeckers here, which I just kind of thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, go to Weymouth Woods. I see them flying around my house. I live in Whispering Pines.
I hear them. I've never seen them.
You definitely hear them. Yeah.
I've never seen them before. And to the point that after like 3 or 4 days, you're kind of tired of looking at woodpeckers. All right, next one.
Oh my God!
Oh,
yeah,
yeah. So this might be my favorite one.
It almost looks like a cartoon,
right? So this is also in northern Poland. Well, before you do that, so let's talk about the squirrel. So it's a red squirrel, and when I was in Warsaw, I took a tour of Warsaw with a gentleman who said he was around during the Night of Broken Glass, and I don't question him. Certainly seemed like he was old enough, and so we're walking through the Central Park, the Chopin Park in Warsaw. and there's a red squirrel. And I'm, of course, I'm like, wow, cool, it's a red squirrel. And he's like, it's named Barbara. I was like, huh? He said, every red squirrel in Poland is named Barbara. I'm like, okay. And I have no reason not to believe him. So right. Anyway, so that's Barbara. And I was sitting on a hide. The hide was over here, and there's a little pond and whatever, and you're kind of laying down. And so the goshawk, is a juvenile goshawk, is just kind of sitting there hanging out. And then the squirrel's kind of scampering all over the place. And all of a sudden, they both stop, and they're staring at each other. And I'm like, okay, this could end really badly, right? For the squirrel. So I've got my finger on the shutter of the camera, which, and my camera shoots 40 frames a second. So it's insane. Then you got to like put it on Lightroom. Yeah. So anyway, so I'm sitting there waiting because I know this poor squirrel is going to get like torn apart. And they stare at each other, and they just kind of go away.
Really?
Squirrel goes off to one side, the bird flies away, and that's it. So It kind of had a happy ending, I think.
Love the ears on that squirrel.
Yeah, right? And I have this blown up, and it's hanging in our house. We've got it framed beautifully. Yeah. And actually locally framed, you know, downtown. Can I make a plug for Eye Candy Gallery?
Yeah, for sure.
Eye Candy Gallery. Yeah, there's a plug. And the beautiful job framing it, and it just makes you stop.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. That's it for all the pictures. But really? Dan, I know Dan and I talked before you came in yesterday. We were talking about these pictures and stuff. Do you have a question? I mean, I know you're into the arts and all that, and do you have something for Shershef that as far as the art or photography? And
I have a ton of time.
If I don't know the answer, I'll make it up. Don't worry.
So just tell us real quick, and we'll reiterate it for the microphone. So what do you want to know from Shershef about this work here that he does?
Are you mostly walking to destinations, or are you mostly, and are you backpacking in these places?
So let's get something out of the way right now. Yeah. Typically, my idea of roughing it is limited hours of room service. Okay, so and these are the only things that I'll do that's considered roughing it. So the photograph that we had earlier of the Arctic fox in the snowstorm.
Yeah.
So the restroom for that was outside. So obviously when you're outside, there's no heat. There was a sauna. So you'd go outside in your boots and, you know, like a bathing suit and a jacket. And you'd go light the fire and come back into the house
mm-hmm.
and, wait till it was warm in there. So that's my idea of roughing it. So this was, we were staying in the town of Belowieża, and we would take a drive out into the forest. And then from there, we'd kind of walk or hike and schlep all of our gear and whatever else. And yeah, that's when I realized I have too much stuff with me, and I swear I'm never going to travel that much stuff again. And sure enough, I do.
Awesome.
So, yeah, you know, you want
to. What a great hobby. Where's the next adventure?
So the next adventure is the Netherlands in April.
Hmm.
And that'll be mostly street photography. I'll spend most of my time. Yeah. So that'll be kind of neat.
A lot of color there.
Yeah. All tulips and stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of history.
And in the homes and row homes. And
yeah. So it'd be kind of neat. That's next on the list. And we'll see where we go from there. One of the things I really, really would like to get to is Mongolia to photograph snow leopards and palet cats. So that's one I'd like to get to. I'm not quite sure if it's going to happen or not.
Does your Nat Geo contact, is kind of like your entree into getting to certain areas?
Yeah, he's super helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy, super helpful. Actually, I sent him a copy of the magazine from the Pine Straw. And if anybody cares to send a magazine to Australia, from here is $18. So, send through the post office. So I thought it wasn't bad. So I actually sent him a copy of it. He's been a big influence and you know, help and...
Do you post any of these pictures? I mean, you're enormously talented, obviously. I mean, aside from what we saw in Pine Straw Magazine, do you post any of your pictures online that people can kind of check out?
I have an Instagram account, Warren Henry Lewis, and I've got a website, warrenhenrylewis.com. And, you've been in the restaurant, and there's that one big one of the twirling horses that was taken in a blizzard. So when you're talking cold weather, you're talking minus 20, and from there you don't even bring it up again until you get to minus 50. Because that point just doesn't matter.
Right.
So that was taken in a sub minus 20 blizzard on the south coast of Iceland. It was so bad they actually closed the roads down, which they hadn't done in that area in recorded time. So, of course, we went outside to see what the horses were doing.
Wow.
And they were having a great, happy time. And that's probably my biggest selling photo.
Yeah.
I've sold an awful lot of that.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which is, it's incredibly flattering that somebody sees something like that and wants it for their home.
Want to pay you for it.
Right. And they want it for their home. It still boggles my mind. You know, it still boggles my mind that people come in for our food. You know, right. It just, yeah, it's kind of interesting.
You're kind of like an Anthony Bourdain, except with photography skills.
Boy, I wish I could write like him, huh?
You get to travel like him to some extent.
He was traveling on Travel Channel's Dime, I think.
Damn, we can like start a new business and let's go travel with Chef Warren and shoot videos. And
there is in Akureyri, Iceland, there's a golf course.
Oh my goodness.
I think it's a northernmost golf course.
Huh.
So there you go.
I have to check that out.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
How do you keep your batteries from freezing?
Good question.
So
how do you keep the batteries from freezing?
In my pockets, I put pocket warmers and I throw my batteries in there.
Literally, yeah.
And the truth is they're not bad. So I shoot with the Fuji system and I have the XH2S. I've got a couple of those. And on a cold, cold day, it's still good for 150 or 200 photographs. Mm. And then you just swap them out, warm it back up, and then it's ready to go again. And another thing with the cameras now, you can USB-C them into a battery backup, which you can have in your pocket. So I've got it's like 28,000 mil or something backup battery that I keep in my camera backpack with a USB-C cable. So if I need to, I can just plug it in and run it that way too. Mm-hmm. So there's always kind of ways. But it is a concern, a consideration, concern, whatever the word is, about having to charge batteries all the time. You know, it used to be film. Well, then you had to schlep film around.
Yeah.
Marianne and I backpacked around the world in 89 and 90 when we first met.
Wow.
And so we spent a year traveling around the world and I shot with film. And that became something to like carry around.
Yeah,
and
cumbersome.
And I would mail it home every month or so. I'd send, you know, rolls of film home to get them processed, and you know, I guess my mom probably saw them all way before I did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a whole different way of traveling. And now you've got to have a computer with you because you're shooting in Lightroom and you've got to bring it in. And it's more complicated and less complicated at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of different. So.
You mentioned the restaurant. Talk about that. Yeah. Chef Warren's, downtown Southern Pines, an absolute staple. People love it. Great,
yeah,
eclectic restaurant
fun,
scene.
Huh?
Talk about your menu, what you got going on now. What's a must-have right now?
So that's the thing that drives myself crazy is people say, well, what's good on the menu? You know, customers who come in. And the truth is, it's my menu. It's my name on the door. And everybody who works for us is family. So I'm not going to have anything on that's going to embarrass anybody.
Mm.
So I like everything that's on the menu, except for salmon, because I don't eat salmon.
Huh.
So I love salmon raw. I just don't like salmon cooked. It's probably one of the few things. Salmon and mackerel are probably the two things I don't eat. And hard-boiled eggs. Otherwise, I'm a pretty good eater.
I'm with you on the hard-boiled
eggs. Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, I'm a pretty good eater. And I've got a couple menu items that have been on forever. Our French onion soup's been on forever. Our lobster rangoons have been on forever. The kangaroo. So as I said, Marianne and I lived in Australia, and used to working with kangaroo there. So I convinced one of my purveyors to get kangaroo for me. So I've got kangaroo on the menu now.
I was going
to
say, how do you import that? Or is it actually purveyors that actually?
Yeah. They get it for me. And so we have that. And I've got steak and fries. Every French chef, so my background's classic French cuisine, and every French chef has a steak and fries. So the one on the menu is mine. It's a hanger steak. My grandfather was a butcher up in Lebanon, Connecticut. So the hanger was the steak he brought home. And we do spicy cheese fries with it, and that can't come off the menu. And the other one is we do a pork schnitzel that just can't come off the menu.
Wow.
Macaroni and cheese with bacon in it, crisp pork, pickled onions. It's really a good dish.
Yum.
Everything else comes and goes.
Yeah.
So we're working today. Casey and I were talking. He runs the kitchen for me. And we're going to do a cod. We're going to crust it with chorizo. And then we're going to take celery root and cook it down in red wine and make a puree out of that on the plate. I'm going to make a mushroom, almost like a hollandaise with mushrooms out of it, to garnish on the plate too. So we'll see how that comes out. I'm like a sabayon.
Nice.
So, but yeah, we're kind of working on that. I've got these young kids who work for me, and how I view my job is to move them along. So I've got to always kind of challenge them and show them different things that they're not aware of and kind of bring them along so they can move on too.
Do you use, I know Ashley at Ashton's, they use local Moore County farmers. How much do you locally source?
Depends on what it is.
Yeah.
So I don't, I'm not like, oh, it's got to be local, local, local.
Mm-hmm.
I typically shop for quality at, you know, the price point that we want to run. And in the summertime, it's almost all local, you know, especially on the produce side. A lot of times I just can't because of the volume that I need. But so, there's some amazing local beef in the area. And I can't get enough of what I need. So, you know, I just can't run with it. So it depends on what I need. Like the birds I can run with, they come out of Greensboro or just over in South Carolina. So there's a lot of things that fish. Our coast here is amazing. It's a great producer.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of depends on what it is. And I know it's a lousy answer, but
no,
you know, we talk about salmon. I like salmon from the Faroe Islands. It's colder water. So the salmon's real creamy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really super nice. So that's, you know, I'm pretty sure we don't have salmon here. Yeah, so it depends on.
What's for dessert?
So obviously pecan pie has been on forever. Can't get rid of that. A truck of mousse has been on forever. And it's an interesting mousse. It's made with egg whites instead of yolks. So it's really super light. Everything else kind of comes and goes. And right now my go-to would be the apple bativier. So it's puff pastry with frangipane, which is an almond filling paste kind of thing with roasted apples on it. Bake that bad boy off and we serve it with ice cream. Caramel sauce. The other one we've got on right now is a flourless white chocolate cake. And that also can't come off the menu because people really like it. And we serve that with fenugreek ice cream. So it's a spice used in Middle Eastern cuisine. And it's got almost like a caramel kind of flavor, caramely vanilla kind of flavor to it. So it's kind of neat. It makes you go, huh. It's kind of interesting. So, yeah.
Let me ask you, as we wrap this up, it has been a fascinating conversation. And Dan, I would love to go on vacation with you.
Let's have a great time. I'm always packed.
So as we wrap it up, Chef, let's talk about, and you're on our board, we mentioned that. We talked about the past in this destination, where we've been. Where are we going to be? Where do you envision this destination being in growth terms from 5 to 10 years from now?
So I'm kind of tossed. So I really, obviously, and every business here, we appreciate having, you know, more customers, more guests,
mm-hmm.
you know, and people who live here kind of way. I hate the traffic.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, it's fine. You put on a podcast.
They're going to expand after the U.S. Open. Yeah. Get ready. It's going to happen.
Right. It's exciting. You know, it's verification that where we picked is the right spot.
Mm-hmm.
Where we live kind of off in the old town of Southern Pines, and I don't have to worry about construction or anything out there. But it's impressive how much the area has grown in a pretty short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know anywhere else that's growing so fast. And you know, the people who are coming in, they're all, I don't know, they're all really good people. So it's been pretty nice.
Yeah, we're in a very, very... fortunate location, great destination. We don't, it's amazing. As much as I go to tourism conferences, we don't have the mountains, we don't have the coast. We're right in the middle of the state, hour from Raleigh, 2 hours from Charlotte. We're right in the sweet spot. Golf is our DNA.
Sure.
But there's so much other things happening here that the more we promote and market tourism, as much as golf is very much what we do, the non-golf related things, you know, the shopping, the dining, the outdoor recreation, the things that are going to be coming here that are non-golf related are really going to build this destination.
Did the putt-putt open yet?
It will be open here in a couple of weeks.
Can't
wait
for
that. We record this
at
the last day of January. In February, it will be open. We Pines at Olmsted Village.
Yeah.
We look forward to that. And man, it's been an awesome conversation, Chef. Well,
thanks for getting me in here.
Yeah, thanks.
We've been trying a long time.
I know. No, thanks so much, man. You're awesome. We appreciate all the work you do, not only for your restaurant, but for the community and for the CVB board. You're an awesome person. We appreciate you and continued success as well. One more thing. How can people make a reservation?
ChefWarrens.com on our website. Remember, I'm our webmaster, so the menu online will probably be out of date because I'm probably in the kitchen, not sitting in front of my computer typing it up. You can also go to Open Table.
Well, I will tell you firsthand, one of the best restaurants in town, if not the best in the entire destination. If you haven't checked it out, where you've been, go to chefwarrens.com and make a reservation. Chef, thanks again.
Sir, thank you.
Thanks for being in Paradise in the Pines. If you want to learn more about tourism, go to our website, homeofgolf.com. If you want to watch this video and many others, over 300 that Dan and Melissa have produced for this destination, go to homeofgolf.com on their YouTube channel. And if you want to download this podcast, just search Paradise in the Pines. Download it, listen to it, share it with your friends, and listen to Chef Warren, because it's a great podcast. And we'll see you next time in Paradise in the Pines.
Appreciate you.
Yep.